Welcome to the Sacred Changemakers podcast, where we dive deep into conversations that inspire meaningful change. This podcast is proudly brought to you by our Inner Circle community, the world's leading global community and mastermind for changemakers. Join us as we uncover powerful insights, essential tools, and effective strategies designed to help you succeed in business while making a profound impact in our world. Are you ready to transform your ideas into action? Visit sacredchangemakers.com and become a member today. Hello, and welcome back to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. Our guest today is Melanie Hirshhorn, who wants to help you step into your spotlight as an authority. She's a publisher and book marketing expert for professionals, business owners, consultants, and speakers worldwide, and she's on a mission to empower authors to share their message with the world. With her comprehensive background of now over 20 years as a celebrity publicist, award-winning journalist in radio, print, and TV, as well as a clothing designer and entrepreneur, Melanie is uniquely positioned to support you to step into thought leadership as a sacred changemaker and make an even bigger impact through writing and marketing your book. Now, I really enjoyed this conversation. It was insightful and inspiring, and Melanie's energy is kind of contagious. I was truly captivated by her expertise and genuine passion for empowering authors. Melanie also shared invaluable insights on how to step into the spotlight as a trusted authority, drawing from her extensive background as a celebrity publicist, award-winning journalist, and entrepreneur. Now, we discussed, many things, but we discussed practical strategies from her new book, Make a Big Impact with Your Book, emphasizing the importance of authentic storytelling, and also how to establish your thought leadership through a book. We talk through the mistakes new authors often make and the pitfalls of publishing your own books and even publishing through a mainstream publisher. Her advice on book marketing was highly actionable, providing a clear path for us all to really consider the book that we would like to write to amplify our message and make a significant impact. So if you're thinking of writing a book to help you to get your work out into the world in a bigger way, if you want to start a movement, or maybe just simply share your story, this episode is a must listen for you. It will help you learn how you can elevate your presence and your influence through book publishing. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Melanie Hirshhorn. Hey, Melanie, welcome to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our conversation because you're in one of those areas that I think can make a real difference to our audience. So I'm really excited to dive in. But before we do, our audience have just heard your professional bio. And we like to kind of go underneath the surface a little bit and find out a little bit about that real life human that lies beneath that bio. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
It's funny because when I wrote my bio and then I read it and I think, is that really me? Because that sounds way cooler than I am. it's funny when you look back on who you are. And you realize that you've done things that maybe other people haven't, and maybe it sounds pretty cool. So who am I? I am the person who is sitting here in this exact chair many, many hours every week. I am a mom of two. I am a wife. I am the house manager. I am a publisher. I am the person who packs lunches. I'm also a person who is so optimistic about life. I always will seek out the bright side in a situation. And I love people, and I love hearing their stories. It is not uncommon for me to be on a Zoom call and meet somebody that I've never met before. And I'm sitting like this. I'm just riveted Tell me more. And then we get to the end of the hour and I've asked them so many questions. Then they stop and they go, but I don't know anything about you. And I say, that's okay. I know everything about you now. So I'm very happy. So I'm curious. And I think that, you know, the thing about me is that I firmly believe that I'm on this earth to help people elevate their voice. Because so often we don't think that what we have to say matters, especially, you know, women or, you know, minorities, you know, people who traditionally are marginalized in society. So if I can inspire somebody to share what's going on in their brain with the world, then I've done my job.
I love that. So can you share a little bit about the journey that you've been on that's led you to become a book marketing expert and publisher? You know, because as you were talking there, I was kind of thinking, you know, what inspired you to focus on helping authors amplify and elevate their voices?
It was certainly not linear.
Is it ever?
I don't know. I've heard people that, you know, my father, he's been working. I just turned 45. He started working in his job when I was 2 weeks old. So he looked at me, he said, I've been in this job for 45 years now. And I said, wow, that's really boring to me. But as long as you're happy. I started out, so I grew up not in the US, I grew up in Canada, but I've always been American. I was born in America, the only one in my family. And so as soon as I could, I ran away to LA because I had, I'm going to be in Hollywood. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a plan, but I'm here. And so I worked in celebrity PR for a few years. And after a famous comedian told me off on my birthday, I guess it was about 20 years ago now, I said, you know what? I don't like being treated like this. I want to do something where I get to make a difference. And at the time, the world wasn't as bifurcated as it is now. And people, I want to believe, liked journalists. The whole talking head thing hadn't really necessarily taken off with the 24-hour news cycle. It wasn't what it is now.
Right.
And so I decided to go to journalism school. And I got a master's in journalism, and then I worked in radio. And when I decided I was going to have a baby because I was married, I've been married about 3.5 years. And I said, you know what? I think we should have, I want to have a baby. Yeah, I want that's what I'm ready for. So I planned to have a child in a non-election year so that I wouldn't upset the balance of the newsroom. It was all men. And so they didn't quite get it, you know? So I was like, okay, I'll only take 3 months off and there's no major election. So we're going to be good. So when I was 5 months pregnant, I got laid off. And it rocked my world because I said, wow, now I'm unemployed and unemployable. I was lucky that I got a phone call from the managing editor of the local newspaper where I was living. And she said, hey, we want you to come and you know, be a freelancer for us. And I said, but Kate, I'm 5 months pregnant. And she said, I don't care. And so I sort of picked myself up and I became a print journalist. And I, you know, I'm walking around. I was a very, very heavy set pregnant person. I gained, oh God, I gained almost 100, no, 80 pounds. I gain a lot when I'm pregnant, a lot. So, you know, I'm like waddling around and it was wonderful. It gave me back my confidence. But one thing that I had always done as a journalist was seek out the stories of the people whose stories weren't being told. And I would be fighting with my news director. You know, there was an election and I said, can I do a series on the wives of the candidates? Right. And I got it and I did it. And so it's, you know, Because these are the women behind the men doing the things. And so when we moved from that area to where we are now in Arizona, I had a choice. I could find a nanny or babysitting that was going to pay more than journalism ever would, or I could do something else. And I had an idea to design and manufacture breastfeeding clothing because I saw a need.
Yeah.
And I felt it deeply. And so I did. I just trusted myself, trusted my instincts, trusted my gut, and Googled my way to having a full line of clothing. I sold on Amazon. I sold on Nordstrom.com. I sold in boutiques in Canada and the US. And then in my seventh year of business, I hired somebody to help me with my marketing because I thought, well, you know, maybe I could use some help. And that was the beginning of the end of that business. She was verbally abusive and it was a very toxic relationship. She was very manipulative. And my husband kept saying, "You're paying her." And I said, "I know." But it's like when you are so deeply entrenched in a manipulative relationship, it's very hard to break out.
Yeah.
So I closed the business. And then I thought, now what? I have to do something because I don't like not doing things. And I really have, I guess what you would call a servant's heart. I really have that. And so when I looked at the through line of all the things that I've been doing, it was always about making people feel better about themselves and sharing what's important about themselves. So marketing and publishing was just a natural outgrowth of that. And when I decided to do it, I started getting phone calls just out of the blue of people wanting help. And now it's the greatest thing. You know, I can sit and I get to read, which is amazing. I get paid to read.
Oh my gosh, I want that job.
Exactly.
I literally do. I am so well known in my family. Like if we're ever in a new city and, you know, we're walking past a Barnes and Noble, my kids will just lock arms with me and go, "No, Mom, you're not going in."
It's all this. I mean, have you ever been to Portland, Oregon?
No. Do I need to go?
Yes. Like they have Powell's Books is an independent bookstore. My husband and I were there for, I want to say, 4 days, and we were in the bookstore twice.
Oh,
I have, and this was about 10 years, 11 years ago. I just buying books and books and books. But what's funny is that I remember not being able to read because I had a really hard time learning to read. So looking back now, the 9-year-old self would never have imagined that I would love books and reading as much as I do.
Yeah. And it feels like a calling as you speak. You know, it feels like there's, dare I say, something sacred in this calling for you to publishing. Because, you know, you've talked about the fact that you believe everyone's voice deserves to be heard. So, of course, going into publishing makes sense, because I don't know if you would use these words, but I'm going to ask you, like, this feels like legacy work.
Ooh, well, I mean, I'm rendered speechless. This does not happen very often. I do believe that, I mean, and it isn't necessarily my legacy, although it would be great if it were, but it's giving people the opportunity to, oh gosh, okay. So now my head, I got a hamster running around in my head. I'm trying to make sense of, when I was an undergraduate, I studied history, like any history, but especially early modern Europe. And this is a silly thing, but when I would be getting ready for finals, and I would be studying, and I'd be in the library at 9 o'clock at night, and I'd be reading through my notes, and I would be so, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. I thought that was off. I would be so overcome with emotion, and I'd be tearing up reading my study notes because I was just so moved by what I was learning. And so So I got to study social history, you know, the history of women in early modern Europe, the history, like economic history. And I just believe that people's stories are vital to the fabric of humanity. And there's a reason that you hear the word herstory. It's because a lot of times the people who, a lot of people get written out of history.
Yes.
So if you have a book, you are guaranteeing that you are part of history.
Yeah. And of course, a book can be a legacy, can't it? So it's like you're the facilitator of other people's legacies in a way. Because when I think about all the books that I've read over the years, you know, a number of them are from authors that are no longer with us now, and yet they've profoundly impacted me in my life. And I think that's what a book can do for you. So as I'm listening to you, and this is a new space for me to think about books and writing and publishing, but it could also be like a real force for driving social change and making a positive impact on society, couldn't it?
100%. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, not to take this from such a happy, wonderful, positive conversation, but there is a lot of predatory behavior in the publishing industry. Right. And I am the first to call it out anytime somebody will listen to me. You know, you hear a lot, well, just publish a book and that's going to change your life. And there are a lot of, you know, would-be authors who pay a lot of money and then they have a subpar product and that's the end. And then they feel bad about it. And that's why I believe that the magic equation is really publishing plus promotion.
Right.
That's your elevated leadership, that thought leadership. That's your legacy. Because if people don't know about something, they're not going to buy it and you're not going to be able to affect change.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the most common mistakes that you've seen authors make, or kind of the pitfalls that they fall into when they're trying to not just publish, but market their books, and how can they avoid them?
So one of the biggest ones is they give up after they've launched. They say, well, that was a lot of work. I'm done now. And then they realize 6 months out that they've had, you know, all that momentum is gone now because they didn't keep going. So that's one of the biggest issues. Another one is trying to do it on the cheap. If you're not being published by a traditional publisher, you will pay. But that isn't, there's no stigma now. There is no stigma. People buy books. It doesn't matter who published it, as long as the content is great. So don't try to get, you know, the interior designed on the cheap, because it's going to be obvious that this was not a professionally done book. So that's that's another thing. But also make sure that you have money for the marketing piece, because again, if people don't know that you have a book, they're not going to make it, it's not going to make a difference the way you want it to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Now, I've met a lot of people, and I think some of the common vernacular talks about the fact that we all have a book within us. But certainly for me, buying books on Amazon and things, and, you know, there's many times now that, you know, we've kind of leveled the playing field with self-publishing. Just like you're speaking to, I'll buy a book, it's got a great cover, great title, and then you get in and you go, there's so many typos in this book, I can't read it, it's annoying me, right? And so, you know, how do you feel about this, that anyone can write a book? Like, what would you say to that?
Well, I don't have an issue with anyone writing a book. Because I think if you have something to say, you know, I believe that you should be able to say it.
Right.
But a book like that with major typos is not going to gain a following.
No.
But it's still, you know, kudos to the person who didn't care that there were typos in their work. I could not handle that. I must have read the interior of my book 20 times before I finally said, okay, we can publish this, because I was looking for every little. I had an editor and a proofreader, and then I proofread it. And I still haven't found a typo, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's important that our listeners hear, is that, you know, writing the book's just the first stage. And, you know, and I know from my own experience that, like, first draft is not the thing you publish. Like, it's probably about eighth draft. And the editing, one of the things I've learned through writing books is how important the editing process is and getting other people's eyes on your book, because there's times I can take my book so far and then I need somebody else's eyes on it because I'm too close to the work. It's like, and I'm actually an editor and a proofreader from a previous life, but I can't edit or proofread my own books properly because I'm too close to the content.
Right.
So there's a reason why the publishing industry has all these structures and scaffolding in place to make sure that the books are of a decent quality. And you're absolutely right, you know. So what is it? What would you say, like, if somebody sat here and going, well, I haven't got a book, but I've thought of writing one, what is it a book can realistically do for a change maker?
Okay. Oh. Wow, where do we begin? So first of all, how about the confidence that you will feel knowing that you are a published author?
Mm.
And nobody can ever take that away from you.
Right.
But then what can you do with this book? You can leverage this book to speak on other people's stages, like this one right here. It's a little meta, but I have the opportunity to share about what I do and to share about my book on your platform with all your amazing listeners and viewers. So I'm talking to you. Hi. Because you've cultivated an audience of people that I would love to reach.
Mm.
So it's the same with speaking on stages. There are many stages that are not open to people without a book. But as soon as you have one, then all of a sudden they say, oh, yes, please come and give a keynote speech. We'd love to hear from you.
Right.
Same with media opportunities. So if you decide you are interested in becoming an expert, you know, that media outlet can have you on. If there are two people who have the same quote unquote expertise, one has a book, the person with the book is going to win out. And not to mention just knowing when somebody reads your book and then they just reach out to you out of the blue and you realize that you've impacted somebody's life in a profound way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a quote somewhere that's just coming to me now, and I can't remember it fully, so I'm going to mess it up when I say it, but
we'll
it's
paraphrase.
Yeah, it's something around, and this has definitely been true for me. When I dig into a subject in a book, it's like I get clearer about my own kind of offers and what the subject matter is and how it touches and interrelates with other subjects. And just that process of writing, and the quote that I'm thinking of is something about, you know, if you want to really learn a subject, teach. And in the book, it's not that I'm necessarily teaching, but it gives me a forum for really exploring in greater detail multiple perspectives around a subject. So it's not, for me, a book is not just my message, if you like, which I know a lot of business owners do their message in a book. But for me, it's like the frameworks and the way that different bodies of work kind of integrate into it as well. And where it sits in kind of the industry, really. It's like, and what differentiates me. So there's a part of me, and again, this is what is often heard in the vernacular, is it can be an extended business card. Now, what would you say to that? Because for me, I agree. And yet, just like you said, so many people publish a book and then kind of go, oh, it's not really, like, after the initial launch, well, then I'll just leave it. And people, you know, if I write it, they will come, kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
And that's not really what happens, is it?
No, so, not at all.
Yeah,
but yes,
so
to the business card question, it is better than a business card.
Right.
Because when you hand somebody a book, then they're going to put it on their nightstand. And even if
yeah.
they never read it, they're still going to see it. And when we talk about marketing touch points, there's nothing better than having somebody go to bed looking at your book, because when they need you and what you do, they're going to call you because you're an expert and you wrote the book on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, in your book, which is Make a Big Impact with Your Book, and the links are in the show notes for all of you listening, you provide a roadmap for authors. Can you share some key strategies from your book that can help our audience build credibility and, you know, with their book sales?
Absolutely. So the first thing that I would love for you to know is that as soon as you write a book, you have a treasure trove of content for your marketing, and you do not have to keep reinventing the wheel because it's all there. You can literally open up to page 56, look at a paragraph, select it, add a hook at the top, a call to action at the bottom, and press publish, because all the wonderful information that you have poured into a book is easily repurposed into your marketing. Another piece is that, you know, sometimes people write a book and they say, well, I just need a publicist now to help me get the word out. And publicists are fantastic and they do great work, but you're making their life harder and going to set yourself up for failure if you don't have a marketing foundation to begin with. And sometimes that's called the author platform, but it's just semantics. All it is if somebody sees you on Good Morning America and then they go to your Instagram, it's a private Instagram and there's a picture of spaghetti, your credibility is out the window. So ensuring that you have all the online pieces in place is going to help you grow your email list. It's going to help you develop that credibility and visibility. So when you do work with a publicist, if you choose to, or do PR outreach on your own, when you are on that TV show or you're, you know, on that podcast, people can go and lurk and find you elsewhere and realize that you're the real deal.
So I'm hearing you say that it's more than the book. That's what it feels like.
It's so much more than the book, which is why I get frustrated when people say, all you need to do is publish a book. I'm like, but no, it's so much more. It's what you do with the book. I mean, look, and if somebody wants to publish a book just for the sake of publishing a book, amazing. But if you have grander plans, that's when that marketing piece is vital.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you a question about, you know, how, particularly for sacred change makers, how do we make sure that our book reaches the right audience? But in a way, you've kind of answered that, because the foundational marketing platform in the different social media sites and stuff is already in action, from what I've heard you say, in terms of building an audience, maybe even before the book is published.
Definitely before the book is published.
Yeah. So that feels a little bit, yeah, like null and void in a way. And it's also where I've seen the mainstream publishing industry go with a lot of my clients who, you know, now to get a publishing contract from a mainstream publisher, they're looking at audience, they're looking at reach. And if you don't have what you're just talking about here, they're really not interested. It's all about numbers from what I can see so far. Is that what you've noticed as well in the industry?
It really is. You know, the golden rule is if you don't have 10,000 Instagram followers, they're not going to look at you. And I mean, there's also other pieces of it that, and not to knock the big publishers, I think what they do is fantastic. But, you know, if you want marketing help, that doesn't come with it.
That's right.
And
it used to, but it doesn't.
It doesn't anymore. So it really is publishing of the book, full stop. So if that's, you know, some people have their heart set, you know, I need Penguin to publish my book. Okay, so get yourself a, you know, write a 35-page treatise on your book, have it shopped around with a literary agent and see what you can accomplish. You know, don't feel like one, if you have your heart set on one way, that you can't do it, because I really believe that you can. And then if and when you say, all right, you know what, I really want to have creative control. I want to have control over when I act, when I publish, I don't want to wait years. Then maybe independent publishing is the right route for you.
Yeah. And we're talking about something now that a lot of my clients, it's one of the biggest questions for them, you know, which is, should I try and get a mainstream publisher or should I self-publish? And it's interesting that you said there's no stigma anymore with self-publishing, because there used to be, didn't there?
Yeah.
And
I
know for some of my clients, they're a little bit like what you were just describing. They're like, no, I do want, like, I want one of the mainstream publishers. I want Macmillan. I want Hay House. I want somebody like that. But if people are kind of stuck, could you just give us a sense of the, like, the main differences to
Absolutely.
Help people make a decision?
Absolutely. So the main differences are the creative control and the cost. You pay to publish with independent publishing. With traditional publishing, hopefully they're paying you. I once had a client whose advance was $500, but they were happy. So that those are the main differences. When you publish, you know, with a big publisher, you get the name recognition. But if your book is not just a book, it's a movement, then self-publishing works beautifully, because you get to create an imprint under your own name. So for example, I like show and tell here. So this is my book published under my own imprint, and my imprint, it's very teeny tiny, but it's Mission Possible Media. So anytime I publish a book, it's under Mission Possible Media. Same with that one. So if you have a movement that you want to start, you have some sort of social impact that's very important to you, then you can create that imprint and publish under that. And all of a sudden you have a media imprint that you can do other things under as well. So it really depends whether you want people to do it for you and you're done and that's it, or you want to be part of the process.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Because also I've had clients who have gone with mainstream publishers, and then after, like, I don't know, even as short as like 18 months, then the publishing house decides not to print any more copies, but won't give the rights back to the author. And then they can't get their audio rights either to put it on Audible or whatever. And so there's all kinds of restrictions that, you know, if you've not been through the minefield, I kind of think of it as, then, you know, you do lose control with mainstream publishers. So that's what I particularly love about self-publishing, is the fact that, you know, I have creative control. I've got nobody else telling me, no, that's not the title, it's this kind of thing.
I mean, so, if you tried to make the title something that's really wackadoo, that isn't going to help you, I would make a kind, gentle suggestion. Don't use that title. But yeah, absolutely. The creative control. And also, you know, at least with our clients, we don't take any royalties. Any money you make from your book, that's yours. All the IP, the intellectual property, is yours. I don't want it. I just want to help you share it with the world.
Right. So for those listening that are thinking about writing but feel overwhelmed at the thought of doing this, I mean, do you have any practical advice of how they can start their journey?
Absolutely. Okay. So the scariest part for me, and, you know, I'm a writer and I was terrified. It's daunting, right? Like a whole book. I can barely write a blog post without, you know, getting up and getting distracted. So the first thing to do is figure out what your book is about and who it's for. So once you have those two things, so you know who it's for and what it's about, then figure out why. Why am I writing this book? And once you have that figured out, then you can kind of say, all right, well, do I want to, you know, do I have clients that I like to serve? And I'm going to just basically take the framework that I use with my clients and write it into chapters. Or am I starting a whole new venture and I'm going to do it that, and I'm going to just start from scratch. And we start with what it is and where we're going. And so then the next thing to do is just brain dump, brain dump. And I like documents. I like Google Docs. I just start typing a Google Docs, and then you can kind of see, you know, what are the topics you want to cover? And then you can reorganize them into a cohesive story. Oh, and one more thing. I know now I'm like overwhelming you, but if you can, just keep a file on your phone and your computer in a notebook of stories. Because there's one thing that I notice with clients, and I'm constantly saying this. So I will read, you know, the manuscript, and then I'll say, okay, you're not in here. So now please go back and add in stories about you. Let's liven this up, because people remember stories. That's how we learn best. You know, I'm tearing up over my history homework. Like, stories get you. Whereas if you're just giving a how to do this, do this, do this, it's not going to penetrate the same way.
Yeah.
So all that to say, just take notes. Like when you're driving, you're like, oh, I should tell this story. Just add it to the file so that when you go back to add stories into your book, if you don't do it at the beginning, you have them at the ready.
So I have to ask you this, because it's on so many, like, so many of our sessions, people bring this up. What's your view on AI and writing books?
Okay. I love AI, but not for writing books.
Right.
Because it's so tempting, right? It's so tempting. Now, you could use it to create the outline if you desperately need it. But Amazon is not a fan of AI. So anything, if you want to sell the book, I wouldn't use AI for it. Also, as much as I love Claude and I love ChatGPT, they don't sound like me, no matter what I do. One time it went off on a whole tangent and started telling this story. And I was like, but that didn't happen. Where did you? It just like went crazy on me. So I would say use it. There are great ways to use it for your marketing, but the meat of the book should be from your amazing brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of my view too. And it's interesting to me because I think, I mean, you touched on it a little earlier, Melanie, which is this idea that if we're writing a nonfiction book, then, you know, maybe it's just going to be a linear teaching thing. But the stories are so important, because for me, AI is making me rethink what it means to be human. How do I not just write a book, but how do I give someone an incredible experience when they're reading it? Right. And that's the difference for me between when I ask ChatGPT to write something, or Claude, or whoever, Bard, or whoever. It's like it's devoid of emotion or any kind of humanity. And so for me, I think this is a good thing, because it's getting us back into what, like, our authentic, that word authentic, I know it's so overused, but it is like, what does it mean to be me? Like, where's my emotion in this? Like, you know, and really conveying that in a way that an AI is completely unable to do, at least now.
It can't. And if it could, then, well, there's no hope for humanity, is there? Just kidding.
Right. So let's just assume that people have written a book, and just like you said, you know, maybe they don't have a large budget for advertising. Do you have any like simple steps that, you know, that they should be doing to really
help? Yes. In fact, I have this really great free resource that you can download.
Oh, perfect.
And it is the ultimate book marketing checklist.
Okay, great.
And it's just at my website, which is vipbookmarketing.com/checklist. Super easy. And it's there.
And I'll put it in the show notes for everyone. So it's easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can just get a copy of that, and it'll sort of take you through. And in there's also an area for you to think of a free resource, because that is, again, a little meta, because I'm suggesting you get my free resource so I can grow my email list, so that you can then get your free resource so that you can grow your email list. But it gives you an idea of how to create it, because the wrong way of thinking, I'm going to just black and white it over here, is that, oh, I just give the first chapter of my book and then everybody's going to want it and I'm going to grow my email list. That went out the window a very long time ago. And if you don't show people the value that you provide prior to them buying the book, they're not even going to spend the $19.99.
Yeah.
Unless their friend said, you have to buy that book. But if they've just come across it, that's why it's vital to really give people a taste of who you are and what you do and how you help prior to them buying the book.
Absolutely. We want books that move people. Right? That's what we're looking for. Because to me, that's a great reading experience. If I'm going to be moved or transformed or, you know, expanded in some way, shape or form, then I'm like, yeah, I'm up for it. Totally.
Yeah. And the thing, I was just going to say, the thing about books is that you can't do anything else while you're reading.
Right.
You can listen to an audiobook, but you literally can't. I've tried to read and do something else. You can't.
Yeah.
So it's commitment, and they're really going to take it in what your words are.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, kind of elevating voices, particularly non-traditional voices, and putting them into the spotlight. So I just wonder, you know, how you see this playing out, because the publishing industry is changing rapidly. And maybe some of those non-traditional voices don't have the same access or the same financial means that, you know, some of us do have. And I just wondered really how you see the publishing industry shifting. And you said at the beginning you were an optimist. So, you know, what's your thinking about how the publishing industry can contribute to a better world for us?
Well, you know, you and I had a conversation prior to the mics going on.
We did.
About collaborative books.
Yeah.
And that is a great foray for someone who doesn't have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to publish a book, because it can be a much smaller investment getting a story, your mission out there in a chapter, and then having others to collaborate with to share the stories and to share the mission. So yes, the playing field is much more leveled, much more leveled now. And, but again, you know, money is always going to be the thing that helps. It's energy. Depending on what you believe, whether money is energy or not, it is a great thing that helps enable us to do the things that we want to do. That said, you could publish yourself on Amazon, publish your own book on Amazon, and do all the work on your own if you have the time. Absolutely. So how the industry is changing, I think there are more opportunities for authors. And I think that you can't get shut out, because, you know, Kindle Direct Publishing isn't going to deny you as long as you fill out the form.
Right. So as you talk, Melanie, I can feel your passion for this field. And I just wonder, you know, is there a story or something like that shows us the most rewarding aspect of your work, and what keeps you motivated to continue in this field?
Okay. Every time my clients have a win, I have a win. I don't mean I'm taking credit for it. I mean, I'm experiencing the joy and the gratitude and the elation with them. So for example, one of my clients, she has a children's book series, and she will go into a classroom and she'll have 30 kids come up to her and tell her how much they love her and they love her character, Bella, and they hug her. They'll go, "Can we hug you?" And the joy that I see in her describing this, and of course, you know, that the kids are buying the books and they're loving the books and it's growing her audience, but it's also giving her a sense of purpose. And that in turn fuels my passion. So whether it's, you know, having children hugging your leg, or, you know, I have another client who, once we got him over the, well, he was basically lurking on LinkedIn and he wouldn't actually post anything. And once we devised a plan for that, he started getting calls to come speak. And he was getting paid to speak and his books were being purchased in bulk. And then he got to share his message with the exact people who needed to hear it. And that's the kind of thing that just lights me up.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. Now I'm noticing the time and I'd love to continue this conversation, but I know we need to cut it short. So let me just ask you one final question, Melanie, and it's just simply this. If there's something you would like to share with our audience that maybe we haven't had time to get to, or maybe it's just some words of wisdom that you want to leave them with, what might it be?
So my grandma, who is 99 and a half, always says,
"Wow,
everything you do goes into the pot and you never know when you are going to draw from it." So I want you to look back on all the experiences you have had in your life thus far and realize that you are an expert in your life and that there are things that you have experienced that maybe someone has experienced something similar, but it's not the same because you are unique. And so I would encourage you and invite you to share that unique experience with the world, because the world deserves to hear it and you deserve to share it.
I love that. Melanie, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation and I know our listeners will have learned so much from you. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure.
Okay, guys, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening in. Now, before we go, I want to remind you that all of the resources and links for our guests are in the show notes at sacredchangemakers.com. And a big thank you to the members of our Sacred Changemakers Inner Circle, who are our podcast sponsors, and also our extended community, helping us make a global impact aligned with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, all visible on our website. And if you're looking for more soul in your life and business, if you have a sense that you have a calling, maybe you're here to make a bigger impact or simply connect with others on your change-making journey. If our episode resonated with you today, I hope you'll consider joining us. Again, you can find out more at sacredchangemakers.com. But for now, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your intention and efforts to make our world a better place. Until next time, lots of love.